In case you don't know me, my name is David McCoubrey, and I'm from Ballinahinch, and I work as a pharmacist, but in the summer for just over 2 weeks, I took some holiday to go out with a team to do some missionary work in South Africa, and we're working with SIM, and that's Serving in Mission, and it's International Mission Society with really hundreds of missionaries that work in countries all around the world. And this here is the team that I went out with. And it's actually a team that was meant to go originally, but a brother of one of the team members had a very serious accident. He was working at a building site down in Dublin. He fell through a roof and very seriously injured himself. And so his sister and also that girl's boyfriend couldn't go on the team. So really at an early stage we faced a problem. And the fella, Paul, who was meant to be going, was one of the main people on the team who'd been out last year, and he was going to be in charge of the building work that we were going to do. So we'd lost someone already. But we didn't realise it was all part of God's plan. And it really, that event drew us closer together as a team. We had to work even more as one to get the job done. And God had provided someone else, a fellow who wasn't meant to be going on the team originally, but a few weeks before that had agreed to go. And he came from a building background as well. So he took over and helped out. So they come from different ages, from different churches, mainly from Monaghan and Cavan direction. Apart from me, was the only one who wasn't really. And that's because 4 years ago I went out to the same place in South Africa for 2 months to work with the lady who's a missionary there. And she is now retired. She's back in Northern Ireland. She's at the far right-hand side, as you look there, Liz Blair. And she'd been mission there for about 10 years in this town in South Africa. Retired, but came back out with us as part of the team. Now, I'm informed that the Danes might know a girl, Lisa, and possibly Jo, from church. You see her? From Cavan. So she said that she remembered Deans and fellow. So so moving on anyway. That was a team, different ages, different jobs with different skills, and that was very useful for the variety of work that we did. So some of the team was the first time out and others they were returning. So we flew via Zurich to Johannesburg, and then we drove about 2 hours to, if you look in the top right, you can see Johannesburg, and then just left and up a bit is a place called Sun City, and that's quite a big tourist resort. We weren't too far from that. We were about half an hour from that, which on that map is a very, very small space, because South Africa is so big. So only about 2 hours from Johannesburg, so it was fairly close. The town we were going to was called Mugwasi, and the town would be about the size of Ballinahinch, I would say, medium-sized town. And we stayed just outside the town. There's a game park that sort of borders in the town. We stayed at the Trojans Camp Centre there. So this area is home to the Swana people in South Africa. And some parts of South Africa was a mixture of people, some white, some more Indian background, but this would have been really 100% of the black South Africans. So South Africa is famous for the wildlife. And we got a chance on one of the mornings to go into the game park and see some of the local animals. So that's elephants, of course. This is what they call a zebra crossing in South Africa. So you have to be careful you're driving. You could come across an elephant in the game park, this is. But we stayed in log cabins that were part of a children's camp centre. You can just about make them out there. This was not in the actual game park, but it was in sort of a fenced off area just outside the game park. So around where we stayed, there were some animals, I guess some impala you can see there, and then there were some baboons, and hopefully Johnny's going to put on just a short little video. Oh, hi Chris. So they came every day, quite a group of baboons to the camp centre, and they would go through the bins, and like the fellow said there, if you left anything out, you'd just grab it and run away with it. So had a day of those. They would also, they learnt how to get into the rooms as well. And they actually could push down the door handles and push the doors. They're very clever. And you would see them, they would climb up the stairs and they would look in the window, have a look around to see if there's any food sitting about. And then they'd come and they'd push at the door. So it would be quite scary because they are, if you got on the wrong side of the baboon, they're quite big and threatening, and they would chase after you. One fella tried to chase him away, and he chased him a bit, and then the baboon turned around and chased him. So you have to be careful with taking them on. So during our time, we did two main kinds of work. We did a bit of work at a Christian-run children's creche in the poorest area of Mobasi, and we did that mainly in the mornings. But in the afternoons and some of the mornings, we did various holiday Bible clubs, really. This would have been the winter holiday for the children in South Africa, so they had 2 weeks off, and we timed our trip to coincide with that. And some of the mornings, most of the afternoons, we did holiday Bible clubs, and that's really what I'm going to talk about rather than the building side of things. So this was whenever we went to a nearby town, Rustenburg, to buy some supplies. And as you can see, we had two pretty full trolleys of stuff. I think we bought over 20 footballs, but after the 2 weeks, we only had one left. Now, it wasn't because it'd been stolen. The kids would be really good. Even the poorest area, you'd give them a ball to play with, and they would bring it back at the end. But they all burst because there's big thorns, you know, about a couple of inches long, you'll find, lying about the base. So they burst them really, really quickly. And we also bought anything bulky we couldn't bring with us, because it's a lot cheaper to buy things there. For those of you who do shopping, if you look really, really carefully, you can see the cornflakes in the right-hand side. Big pack, 1 kilogram pack of cornflakes is 19.99 in South African rand. And that equals about £1.65. And for those of you who know the price in Tesco's, it's £3.18. So it's about half the price you pay at home for things. So it was a lot cheaper to buy everything we could out there. We bought some Christian things, you know, bookmarks and various craft things with us, but everything else we bought out there. Each afternoon we'd split into three different groups and travel to three areas to do a club in them. It'd be very similar to what you would find in CEF holiday Bible clubs here, because the lady Liz Blair, she actually, before she went out to SAM to South Africa, she worked with CEF, so she was using the same materials, and that's what we carried on with. We would go and play some games with the children, just to get their attention, let them know we're here. And then we'd get them sat down on the mat and do memory verse, Bible lesson, quiz, and sing some choruses as well. Do a mixture of choruses in English and some in their own language, Swana. When they go to school, they start to learn English from quite a young age. So the time they're maybe 9 or 10, they can speak English fairly well. But the younger children and those in the less well-off areas wouldn't speak so good English. So thankfully, in each place we went to, we'd have at least one translator, maybe someone from that area to help us as well. These would be a mixture of maybe Sunday school teachers from local churches, and also this lady here, Eunice, on the far right-hand side. She helped Liz for many years, just on a voluntary basis, whenever she was out in South Africa, and now she is training with CEF, and she's a candidate with them. So she did a lot of organisation of her time during in South Africa. And also the fellow who's standing there helping to teach the memory verse, he would have been in Liz's Sunday school class whenever she was in South Africa, and he sort of grew up with her teaching, and then he's at university now, but he's came back to help us for a while. So some clubs were that sort of size, about 20 to 30, and that's just in someone's garden, and in other clubs taking place in church buildings. As you can see, it's not very much of a church, just really a tin hut with some, I'm not sure that has anything on the ground, and just some chairs set out, but we'll get maybe 70 or 80 children coming along each day to this club. And this is not in Mobasi itself, but in a village just outside. In this club, one of the days, 29 children stayed behind, wanted to find out more about being a Christian, so we, you know, split into groups and using the two translators, tried to counsel them and give them out tracts so they could learn more about how they could become a Christian. They're very, very open to the gospel message, you know, and very much wanted to take it in and listen very, very carefully through all the lessons. This one here is another church building. And this one, they just sat on the ground on bits of cardboard box really that we brought in. And again, in this club, there was a real interest. They crowded in as many as they could fit in into the club. And this is just me doing a lesson one of the days in the club. Even though, you know, I'm talking a language that they don't really understand, and they're having to hear once and then hear it again translated, they really, their attention was incredible, and their enthusiasm, especially for the quiz, they get really worked up during the quiz. And just, they really appreciated the fact you came and spent time with them, and even playing the games, it really meant a lot to them. And there you can see the children just from inside that club, outside. Now, if you're looking at them, you would think it was the middle of winter, and to them it is the middle of their winter, but this would have been maybe about 20 degrees Celsius at this time. But to them it's freezing, and they'll come in hats and scarves and gloves, and, you know, they think, they can't believe that this would be the best it ever gets in Northern Ireland. They don't want to come here because of that. And this is some of the children. You can see them getting stickers on the last day, and the stickers on their heads. And you can see some of them there, including the tracts that they received as well. So another part of the club they enjoyed was sometimes at the end we'd do some craft with them. Now this club here was slightly different. This is one of the ones we did in the morning, and this was in the McGwassey jail. Now the children are children of the prison workers. They, because South Africa is such a big country, the prison workers lived in part of the jail complex, and so their kids during the holidays, they're really sort of literally locked away from everyone else in the village. They're on their own. So we went in, did a club and some games for them, and the intention of this club was that through us, the Lady Eunice would get access into this area, and then she could come back and do a more regular Good News Club, and that's what she's doing at the moment. And every week, there's going to be only 7 or 8 children attending, but now there's over 20 children coming on a regular week-by-week basis to it. So children really enjoy doing the craft. You don't have to do one craft for 4, 5, 6, another craft for 7, 8, 9, another craft for 9, 10, 11. You just do one craft for everybody. Your 14 and 15-year-olds will enjoy equally colouring in, sticking things on, cutting things out as the 3 and 4-year-olds. And everyone helps each other, and they just get on with it very well. Although they do sometimes, they don't want to miss out on anything. If you have stickers, they'll want to all get the same amount of stickers. You know, they'll be very particular about getting everything equal, that you wouldn't be favourites towards anybody. They also find it gives them something to bring home and to show their parents. And even, you know, to bring a Bible verse back and just let their parents see that what they were doing and the things that we were teaching them. So, the games are also a popular part of the club. We're doing that. Obstacle course here with them. So as you can see, the areas, they can vary very much. This is someone's house. You know, it's as good a house as anywhere you would get here. Inside, some of the houses can be quite fancy, and these would be in a better off area of the town, where maybe, you know, you have like teachers, policemen, sort of shop managers, people would live. But then there's areas where it's just literally, you know, shanty town kind of area where people live, and build their houses out of anything they can find, and there's no electricity, no running water. They have to go and collect water from sort of one of two taps in the whole area. So you go from one extreme to the other. You know, just right beside each other, you have people living, you know, as well as an average person here would. And then down the road, you have people who are getting their food from the local dump. So it's really very varied in terms of how well off they are. This is the football pitch in the area called Unity 8 that we did quite a bit of work in. And as you can see, the surface isn't the best. You find a lot of broken bottles and rubbish just lying over the pitch, and there's kind of a river running through it from the water tap. But kids just love, you can see they're playing in their bare feet on the ground, and they'll run along and stand a bit of glass or thorn, they'll just put their feet up and pull it out and carry on. It doesn't mean anything to them. So they just love you to spend time with them, play a bit of football with them, you know, just talk to them. In South Africa, children aren't sort of treated as importantly as they are here. And the way that we spoke to them and were willing to help them was really meant a lot to them, I think, helped them to listen to what we're saying. So I want just to leave you with a few things that you can maybe remember in prayer. There were a number of children that became Christians. Now, it's always hard to know because you're working through a translator with the children, and, you know, we have to rely on the Sunday school teachers in these different churches and Eunice to follow up, taking a list of the name of those children and make sure they're going to a church, make sure they're attending Sunday school, and follow up and find out more detail if they became Christians. But we genuinely believe a lot of those children who stay behind did genuinely become Christians at that time. So just for them, that God will be with them and help them and strengthen them and help them to grow in their faith. And then also, this area, Unit 8, didn't show a whole lot of it, but this was a very poorest area of Mogwassy. And it's really not a very nice area, especially at night time. You know, a lot of problems with alcohol and very dangerous for the children to be around, especially the young girls. Just not a very pleasant place to be. And so just that God would watch over them, particularly those ones who are Christians, that he'd help them to take a stand for him and just not get involved with the things that are around them. And then for the lady there, we thought we can see Eunice, just for she trains in CEF, that she would be able to stick with that. She would get the support she needs to be a full-time worker, and that the people would support her. As I say, sometimes children work in South Africa is seen as the very bottom rung of the ladder, and if you're helping out in church, you maybe start the Sunday school, but you should move on to something more important. And so just the people would see the value of children's work, and also that she'd have more male helpers. It's very much seen as something for females only. And she really believes it's important that the boys have a role model, and you know, they don't see Christianity as being just something for girls. So I really enjoyed it, and I think that we, you know, made a difference during even just our short time there. And hopefully it wasn't just a work for the time we were there. Hopefully we started things that can carry on.
First of all, this is Papua New Guinea. Okay, it's just north of Australia, literally on the other side of the world, so it is. Where I was staying, if you notice, Goroka, on the map there, it's just to the middle of the country and to the right. That is where I was staying. Papua New Guinea is a very isolated sort of a country. In fact, it's the most dangerous place in the world to fly an airplane. So it is split down the middle. Just see where Papua New Guinea is written across that. The country is split in half. The only way they can get around is by airplane. It's so remote that you can't even put a road across it. And that's just the way it is. It used to be run by the Australians, but in like the 1960s it became independent. So there you are. Okay, what I'm going to do is first of all show you what Papua New Guinea looks like. So I'll just run through it, a couple of slides, and show you what the general idea of what it looks like. So okay, oh yeah, we'll say about Vision Track. Vision Track is a thing that is set up by New Tribes Missions to give people a better idea of the mission field. It gives people opportunity to use their own skills to go out for maybe a month or whatever, and you get a better idea of the mission field and everything to do with it, and you get to visit missionaries and just get to show them around the country and stuff like that. So, and this is Papua New Guinea. Okay, you stop it there. Okay, these here are people. The guy in the middle is a cook, and he has taken a year out of his studies to come and basically cook for all the people in the place that we stayed. The guy to the left of him, the guy to the right, and the two girls opposite ends were there from May, and they are hospitality staff. And what they are is just people that give a set amount of time, and they go and they stay in a place like the place that I stay in was called ITF, and it's Interface Campus. And what it is a place where if you wanted to thought to yourself, I want to become a missionary, but you didn't know anything about it or what it's involved and stuff like that, it's basically, you can go to this place and you get an idea. You get taught how to go through the Bible chronologically, how to learn a language, how to write a language that you've never heard before. Then you get like, and you actually get some of the local people in to like teach you stuff, and you actually learn from them. You're sort of set with that person not knowing anything, and you're basically trying to learn the language that way. Which just seems like a very good idea. So it does, like, but these people are here for basically for that. These are the families. Basically, it takes everybody there just to run that one place. It's obviously excluding the children, like, but and in fact, the guy on the top left and let's see this bottom, the guy in the green stripy shirt, they're Germans. Nothing against that, but anyway. They are, apparently they get a lot of Germans, so they do, because, in Germany you have to, do military service, and this is a way that they can get out of it. But, in fact, the guy on the left, apparently he, his dad and mum were missionaries in Egypt, so he was born in Egypt, but he sounded German to me, so. Okay, these are some of the people that stayed at the place that thought were deciding whether they wanted to become missionaries or not. It's actually surprising some of the ages of them. Some are 16 and 15 year olds, you know, and they're deciding whether or not to become missionaries. So, in fact, I was older than all of them. So, this is our team that went out to do the work. A lot of them are just random sort of things, you know, just, not any specific trades. I mean, one guy was a computer programmer, another guy was an air conditioning designer, one was a nurse, then a cabinet maker and stuff like that. But it wasn't really for that, it was just, you know, willing to help sort of thing. So this is the place that we stayed. I'll just run through these here a bit quicker. This is that the place that we stayed. Okay, this is our first work project. This is a workshop, that's the word I was looking for. Basically the roof was leaking and it was destroying stuff, and there was only like two people there that could have done it, and we've taken them too long, so they got us to do it. So yeah, I'll run through the pictures. Do you want to run through it there? It was a bit ropey, to be honest, say the very least. I felt, well, didn't fall through, but a lot of the wood was rotten, and you're just walking along and your leg went down through it. And that's one of the missionaries. So he's in charge of the maintenance of the place that we're staying. So. Okay, let's stop it there. Whenever we're working, you gather a crowd all the time, and one of the days we just turned around and we saw these people with the machine guns. Okay, and they sat there all day watching you with the machine guns. It was good, like, made you feel a bit nervous, like, but apparently they're friendly enough, so. Yeah, that's the second work project that we got done, because we finished all their ahead of schedule. They had a kitchen, so they discovered the guy was a cabinet maker, so they told him, make the cabinets. So I was impressed, like, he made it from scratch, like, so we just run through it. That's, I ended up wearing it, of course. So that's the guy in the middle is the cabinet maker, and the woman to the left and is his wife, and the woman to the right or is his daughter, and then some people from his church which he knew, so they were basically in charge of it. because this is inside of the place. So I spent about 3 days on that floor at all. Wasn't very fun. You had to knock the nails down and all the rest of it, and it was more planing than sand. The floor is that uneven. Okay, that's again the right Dave Hilt. He's the guy that's in charge of, was in charge of us. He spent 30 years in Papua New Guinea in different places, but he had to leave because his wife had kidney failure. But yeah, so he's put in charge of basically these sort of trips and stuff like that, and going around colleges and stuff like that there to like speak to young people. And in fact, there was like 2 people that were of the young people that were deciding to become missionaries came because of him. So that's the third project. We had a lot of projects. So this is a watershed where they have 4 wells at the bottom of a hill, and they pump the water up here and then gravity feed it. But the problem was, because it was on top of the hill and all the people were walking past, they had a habit of going and switching the water off. So it takes a few days to fill all these things up, so they would have to do without water for a day or two because they switched the water off. So we had to cover and sheet it, and because we sheeted it, it needed lights because it was too dark, so I ended up doing that. So let's skip through this quickly because it's not really interesting, but yeah, I had to dig a track to get the electric cable in as well, which is, it's good. Oh, aye. This is the other half of our work team. We got split into 2 sections. One was in the ITF place, which was only like 2 miles away, but it took 3/4 an hour to 1 hour to get there because of the roads. This is the other half of the team. They were in a place called Apilo, which is the headquarters in Papua New Guinea for New Tribe Missions, where everybody goes, like the missionaries' children go to school, and they have like dentists, and it's just like a mini village. And they were building this new building, so they were put there to help out with it, and they were more like, there's a few joiners and stuff like that, so they knew what they were doing, so they were put there. And this is a building that they do. Okay, that's all the people that were there. That's all the stuff that we did as in work ways. This is what they showed us as in the culture of Papua New Guinea, is Bamumu. It's basically what they do to celebrate stuff. It's just basically having a big feed. So the women prepare it. The only thing the men are allowed to prepare is the bananas for some strange reason. I don't get that at all. But they sat around, and then the women did all this here sort of thing, and they it took about 4 hours to do. What they do is they get all the stuff ready, and they peel it and all the rest of it, and that's the finished product, and that's lamb. So it is, it's quite an expensive thing to do because of the amount of food and stuff like that there, and New Tribes Missions provide this food as long as the locals will cook it, sort of thing. So they got this all ready in Orisit and did it. So we ate as much as we could, and it wasn't very much because it wasn't very nice, but so they got to eat the rest of it. So yeah. This is them sitting about waiting. Okay, this is what a mumu is from start to finish. They dig a hole, they start a fire, and then cut down a banana tree, and then shape around it in a square. Then they stick bamboo sticks into it. They weave some grass around it to put a shape around it. Then across the middle. Then they set all the food into it, the vegetables, bananas, lamb, and then they cover it over with banana leaf and a big rag, and then they leave them big hole in the middle, and, oh wait, didn't have enough pictures there, oops, but I'm like, sorry, that was my fault. And then they cover over in dirt, and then they fill it full of water. Lots and lots and lots and lots of water. Like, I think we must have had like 12 buckets about that size, and they just filled it up. And then it's all the steam that comes out, and then you wait about 2.5 to 3 hours for a thing. And that's the finished product. Yeah. It wasn't very tasty anyway. The bananas were just rank, so they weren't, you know, they were dry, so, you know, as soon as you bit into it, like, you just needed a drink, like, and then the lamb was just pure fat. You could hardly hold it with slip out of your hand. And this is us eating it. It's just some pictures of them at the place. And this is our trip to Groca Town. This is Balemwall. This is where all the locals, because there's like, I think there was like 99% unemployment in Papua New Guinea, they depend a lot upon their own skills and stuff like that. So what they do is they go and weave in bags and stuff like that, and handmade products and stuff like that, and then they sell them in the town, hoping that, you know, tourists like us came along. There was a massive crowd around us whenever we arrived, sort of thing, like, you know, they were trying to sell us everything. There's a statue in the middle of the town, so this is just a few pictures of the town itself. They were trying to sell us an aisle. Yeah. I thought it was stuffed, and then it started moving, and I was like, well, I had a lot of security guards about, so they did, because in fact, the other group went to the supermarket, and while they were there, somebody tried to steal something. Somebody shouted, thief, shutters dropped instantly, and everybody who wasn't involved moved to the edges, and then about 5 of them came in with clubs and just laid in. This is New Chai's Missions Aviation Hangar. Sort of a very important thing, because it's how they bring food and stuff like that to the missionaries who don't have roads and stuff like to get to them. So, and in the Lapio places is where all the maintenance crews and stuff like that stay. And so they drive out here, just go to work and sort of thing, and then, you know, do the maintenance and stuff like that, and do everything that needs to be done. This is one of their airplanes. This is one of the guy that sort of runs the thing. And there's a map of Papua New Guinea, and every pin on the thing is where they have a land strip. So, and that's their refueling machine. This is a airplane that's got taken apart. Basically, like the MOT, it's done enough air miles sort of thing, so they have to strip it apart completely and then redo it sort of thing, because of safety sort of thing. So you can imagine it took a lot of man hours to do that there. And then as well as that, we got to visit a missionary and their church and the village that they live in sort of thing. So this is the missionary's wife, and I don't know where a lot of you have probably heard about New Chai's missions, how they set up a place. They have to have possibly 2 families and then 2 single people in an area or a town or whatever sort of thing. Just that's the way to do sort of thing. This is the woman on the left is a woman that, you know, part of that group, but the place that they are at is under the undermanned sort of thing, because one family and one person had family troubles, had to leave and go back to America. That's the man that's sort of in charge of, and his daughter. And that's his daughter, 2 daughters. This is where they live. This is like, they live in a wee vicinity sort of thing, and this is in the wee village beside their place. that guy was trying to sell us stuff, so he was showing, you know, trying to show us, you know, everything he had, sort of thing. So, yeah, this is a village. Actually, just below that there opening, there was a massive selection of marijuana plants. So, yeah, it grows wild everywhere, but it's not actually. You think you see it so often, they don't use it. They use this other berry, and I'll show you later on. Everybody's teeth is red, and the first time I went into the village behind where we were staying, you saw these red splatters all over the place, and I was like, "That looks like blood." And then I walked on. There's more blood, and it looked like a massive trail, sort of thing, leading away, sort of thing. And then I was like, I looked at it that much that somebody said, "Did they not tell you?" sort of thing. And I was like, you know, that's just their buai. This is what it's called. It's a red berry, and they feed it to their children, sort of thing. So they get addicted to it from a young age, sort of thing. But everybody's teeth is stained with it. Like, you can't. It's one of these things, you know. You can't say that you don't have it, because, you know, you can see it in your teeth, or see it in your teeth. Right. This is their village. I'll just run through it quickly. So, there's some of the people at it. This is their church. That's just it. That's the building that they have, and that's where they do everything. This guy actually gave them land to build their church on, and he's a Christian, like, and the week after, or the Sunday after we visited him, he was going to preach for the first time. So, that's his children. And that's a pig in his house. Yeah, they love their pigs, so they do. They actually love their pigs more than dogs and stuff like that, and in some cases their children. I've heard some, like, some people don't name their children until they know that they're going to survive. And if they think that the child isn't going to survive, they'll nurse a piglet, if you know what I mean, before they would nurse the child. Yeah, this is another thing, that the children all run around with knives. If you notice, that's a small knife. There was this 4-year-old, and he had this big machete, and it was the size of him, and he was just sitting there, you know, doing whatever, like, you know. This is a trip to a local church that New Tribes Missions founded, but is now run by, you know, the local people. The guy in the bottom right hand corner is the minister. The guy in the top hand corner is one of the elders. He came over to me and announced himself and said, "Hello, my name's Elvis Presley." And I started laughing at him a wee bit, and then he sort of looked at me funny, and then I realized, oh wait, he's serious. And then I just watched him as he did it to everyone else, and they did exactly the same thing, and the same expression went in his face every time, like. But they seemed to name their children oddly. There was a wee fella at the start of the thing, his name was Rocky, and his brother was called Rambo. So, and as well as that, you think that they're ignorant, like, you know, they're in the middle of nowhere, they don't know anything, but I've heard some of the people who were designed to become missionaries, they were saying the week before we came, they were asking us what they thought about Michael Jackson dying, you know, and, you know, that's him and his family and his wife, and they got up and sung in church. They say that a church meeting in Papua New Guinea can go anything between 2 hours and 6 hours, all sitting on the floor. The meeting we were at was 2 hours, and I was in absolute agony. So it was awful. This is a small video of the church service, and this is them singing. Just a few pictures of, you know, people in the church and stuff, and all the elders sat at the front, sort of thing, and Dave, you know, our leader, got up and preached in Pidgin, which is the language. There's that's like the general language of the country. You know, it's a funny language. You can sort of half understand it, but you can't. It's like a mixture of English and whatever else. So whenever they come over and say something, like, you sort of like say it again, sort of thing, and then you might be able to understand. But that's just the collective language, and it seems to be that more and more people are going towards speaking that, because in Papua New Guinea there's thousands and thousands and thousands of languages. Like, you could have a totally different language a mile away, and that just seems to be the way it is. And it's also a bit disheartening for some of the missionaries that are set themselves up, and, you know, in a way, like Dave and Libby are there, and they're acclimatizing themselves and getting to know people, and then they're starting to translate the language and learn the language, and then maybe 10 plus years down the line, it gets to the point, and then they go and try and hand them a Bible, sort of a thing, and then they say, oh, we don't want to use that language anymore, we're using Pidgin. And they knew that all along. So, it's happened a couple of times, so, yeah, they provide us another moo-moo. But this time I had chicken, so it was a wee bit better. That's them getting their food. It seems to be like a whole day affair sort of thing, you know, Sunday, because it takes so much effort to get there, you know, to stay there all day. There's a market in the village beside where we are staying, like, I mean, sort of like from here to, you know, the opening of the chicken houses, that's how far away the village was, sort of thing. They set this up purposely for us. I think it benefited them, because they would have had to travel for about an hour, sort of thing, to get into the nearest town to sell it, while we were just there, sort of thing. So they had better stuff actually in there than what they did in the town. Some that there's bamboo, and what they do is they smoke it, and then they carve out all these shapes and faces and stuff like that. The one on the far right, if you can make it out, is actually meant to be Jesus. But you can sort of appreciate sort of the skill involved to do it. This guy came out and started asking for money for pictures, sort of thing, and he just came out and started acting needed, sort of thing. So, okay. This is Papua New Guinea's House of Parliament. Although the country is officially Christian, and as well as that, it's meant to be an English-speaking country. But what I was told is to do this here sort of thing because of the benefits that go along with trade and stuff like that, if you say you're an English-speaking country. But this here is Papua New Guinea House of Parliament, and it's actually based upon a witch doctor's spirit house. So, you could sort of see, you know, the mindset of the country, sort of thing, you know, with that, even in the House of Parliament, sort of thing, you know, that they're, you know, they're basing all their, you know, like, even from the highest point, you know, you can see that sort of the darkness of the country, like, but, at the same time, my experience in Papua New Guinea was, whenever people said things, you start comparing it to here, and then you start thinking, actually, things aren't that different. Because whenever they said, like, people would go to, during the week, you know, they would do all their spiritual rituals and stuff like that there, and, you know, believing in spirits and stuff like that there, and then it started, my equivalent of that there was people going and praying to the dead, you know. If, I don't know, even at work, you know, a fellow went and said to his daughter to go to, you know, they visit their grandfather's, you know, grave, and they said, pray to your granda, and, you know, so on. But, and then on Sunday, they would still go to Lotu, which is their church, and they were trying to mix everything together and just making sure, you know, as long as we do this here, we'll be alright in the end, sort of a thing, you know, but. Yeah, and that's just her picture, and that's pretty much it.